The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
We wanted to hit Kerry like they were never hit before. And he goes, when we hit them, and then we go, oh, they don't like this. And then they went at them again. That's what Tyrone have to do.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Where the football chat flows like Jack Grealish's hair.
Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
It's a three-word tweet. Welcome home. Comma, at Cristiano, and then the hashtag is MUFC, and the hashtag is Ronaldo. And as we're recording this, there's 530,000 retweets and 858,000 likes. Daniel Harris, good evening to you.
Hello.
Is this a deal that has been done to boost the social accounts of Manchester United, or is this a deal that's been done to boost the playing stock of Manchester United?
I doubt it's a social thing. I mean, there probably is a financial upside. And I also think that it's probably quite a good misdirection tactic, in that the fuss that will be made by the signing of Ronaldo will misdirect us from all the money that the Glazer family are still taking out of the club, and the fact that Ole wanted players this summer that he hasn't been allowed. So I think there's, there are obviously still strong football reasons for signing Ronaldo, and but it is also probably some kind of misdirection and PR exercise too.
Well, it's possible that this is one of those multifaceted deals which actually ticks a lot of different boxes for loads of different people, and will also provoke some very significant questions about the ongoing case that Cristiano Ronaldo has in Las Vegas. We'll get to that in a moment. Maybe if we can talk through the cynical PR exercise aspect of it before we get to the football side of it. There was definitely, in one of the early parts of the day, where Manchester United were massive outsiders to sign Ronaldo and Manchester City were 5-1 on, somebody was floating the notion that this would help the Glazers win back the support of the fans. And I have to say, it looks like that has been quite a successful ploy.
If we ignore the allegations against Ronaldo that we're going to come to in a minute, if you forget that, then it is a massive PR triumph, because United have got one of the greatest players ever to play the game, who's still good, who was amazing for United previously, and they've got him at a point when it looked like City had no option but to sign him because they were so desperate for someone to play up front. And there is obviously a very strong history of United signing amazing players who City wanted, like Fred and Alexis Sanchez. So they get a massive PR win from getting Ronaldo back home in inverted commas, because let's not forget that he did also come, be amazing for United after some time not being amazing, bugger off for his peak years, and now he's coming back home when he's almost finished. So there is also a bit of that. But the PR side of it is United have got themselves someone who's still a brilliant player. And if you play for United, if you're Marcus Rashford or Jadon Sancho, I mean, I know you're not, but for the people that are, the idea they're going to get to play with Ronaldo is, I'm sure, an unbelievable boost, that they want to train with him. They want to learn from him. They want to set up goals for him. They want his approval when he does good things. And I'm absolutely certain that the United squad now are absolutely buzzing with what's gone on. So there are many, many reasons why this is a win. But footballistically speaking, to borrow Arsene Wenger's phrase, we won't really know what's going to go on until we see what happens on the pitch. And there are also some potential downsides, in that there are a lot of attackers at United now. And the ones who most obviously demand inclusion are not necessarily the best ones. And I wonder whether Ole has the force of personality and the reputation and the political capital to pick the right ones when he should do.
You mean if there is a game later in the season, Ronaldo's not quite in form, it's a big game, is he going to have the balls to drop him?
Well, that's it. Like, you can sort of imagine, like, Michael Carrick going, you tell him, and Ole going, no, you tell him, and Mike Phelan going, no, you tell him. And yeah, who's going to tell him?
It's not Mike Phelan anyway.
Yeah, so it is, yeah, that when you have someone like Ronaldo, every time you don't pick him, it's a story, and you couldn't be sure that he is necessarily going to be the best option for every game. I mean, as I say that, sounds a bit silly, but Mason Greenwood is in the process of making himself undroppable. I actually thought he'd made himself undroppable at the back end of last season. He started this season brilliantly. I want to watch him play up front, and I was kind of hoping that that would be the case this season. Whereas now you're looking at it and you think, well, if you pick Ronaldo in every game, then you can only have two from Rashford, Sancho, Cavani. And then you've also got Martial and James knocking about, and Pogba's been playing on the left recently. So I'm not sure how you manage to get the right team picked for every game that wins every game whilst maintaining continuity, whilst building your team for the future. I don't know.
Maybe injuries sort that out for you after a couple of weeks, and you don't have to worry too much about it too often, because we have seen that the biggest squads sometimes aren't even enough cover for the slew of games that come thick and fast. It does feel like, though, that there will be crunch moments where you are going to have to try and fit all those players in. And what is the team? What is the style of play? What is it 3-5-2? Do you suddenly have to try and completely change things?
I don't think so. I mean, because I think the problem with United is still the midfield. The defence, you would think, would be one of the best defences in the league, if not the best defence in the league. And then the problem, as we saw even against Southampton, was progressing the ball from the back to the front. And if your midfield has Matic and Fred in it, that is going to be a problem. And it doesn't matter, even if you had prime Ronaldo and prime Messi praying together, getting them the ball with those players in midfield is going to be a problem. My guess is that the attack will eventually be Sancho on the right, Ronaldo through the middle, and Rashford on the left. And then I wouldn't be... It seemed over the last couple of days that there's some sort of row coming up with Cavani anyway, in that he wants to play for Uruguay, which is obviously totally understandable. But the quarantining situation means that for every international, he's missing about 74 United games. So perhaps it may be that Cavani ends up not staying now. Who knows? Perhaps they sell Daniel James. Perhaps Anthony Elanga wasn't going to go on loan. Perhaps he does now. But it looks like Marcus Rashford's going to be back soon. There's also obviously the situation where you've got Kylian Mbappe is going to go to Real Madrid. Are PSG going to then say, well, why don't we pay some of that money, spend it on Paul Pogba? Because if Pogba doesn't sign with United, he's going to be available for free in next summer. He's going to have a choice. He might not necessarily go to Paris. But if Paris offer money for him this summer, then that would probably be enough to get him. And as what we were just talking about before, is all these attackers United have, if they were to then flog Pogba and get money for him and then be able to reinforce the midfield, that would remove one of the players now that Pogba is suddenly a left winger.
This is all quite cartoonish. This summer has turned into a weird soap opera fantasy fever dream of a 16-year-old on FIFA. That's what this feels like at the moment.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, the thing is we sort of, you mentioned it right at the top, the Ronaldo's allegations. And that to me is like the thing that overrides everything. Like my dad and my wife have already asked me about this. And ultimately, the first thing I would always say is there are these allegations. They frankly don't look good. And to me, that would always be the most significant aspect. And this is one of the things with football, is being good at football seems to obscure everything else. That's why Abu Dhabi have bought a football club. That's why Qatar have bought a football club. Because football is the best way of convincing people that real life doesn't exist, the best way of communicating across borders. And it enables us to forget that things happen that are more important than football, and that should be so distasteful to us that they override everything that happens on the pitch. And I mean, Ronaldo hasn't been tried for the allegations, so there's that. But putting that to one side, like any rational, moral human being, I would always start from a position of, well, let's believe women at this point. And it is very hard to reconcile what all the reports on this case say with, yeah, let's celebrate this individual without any kind of compunction or query. So there is also that. But if we move back to the football thing, as you say, it is absolutely bizarre what's going on now. And I mean, what you've sort of ended up with is United and Liverpool and Bayern Munich, because of Corona, it had felt this summer like they are sort of the last remaining bulwarks against a takeover of football by oil money, because obviously Roman Abramovich is still rich, Qatar is still rich, Abu Dhabi is still rich, and the Spanish clubs have been struggling. Now, it's now been the case that obviously Real Madrid, I guess, have gone to the bank and said, can we have 160 million credit for Kylian Mbappe? And you can understand why a bank would say, well, okay to that. And it's weird where you see a transfer like that happen, and in your mind, you're saying, well, that's sort of almost a good thing because you want balance in the game. And there is a lot of things to dislike about Real Madrid. But the things to dislike about Real Madrid are not quite as virulent as the things that there are to dislike about some of the other clubs.
Yeah, they're old school things you can dislike about them. You know, they're
yeah.
I mean, in a way, of its time, that was the nation state expressing itself through football. If you think back to the sweetheart deal that they got from the Madrid government to wipe out their last debt that was going to bankrupt the club when a piece of land was miraculously overvalued to the exact same amount that they needed to, you know.
Like, yes, and when we hear all these arguments against FFP, and it's a strong argument that you don't want to reinforce the existing cartel of basically United, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Barcelona. I 100% agree with that. But the way that we counteract that isn't by allowing nation states to try and sports wash by buying football clubs. That isn't the way. There are better ways, like whether you limit squad sizes or whether you have a wage cap or whether you have a cap on the amount of money that you're allowed to spend on incomings in a particular season or a combination of all of those things. I want football to be equitable. I don't want it to be where you have one team winning things all the time. And I'm sure I've said this on here before a million times, that if you didn't have Abramovich's money and you didn't have Abu Dhabi's money, would Man United have won every league title from 2007 to 2013? Like, maybe. But you don't want that either. And I say that as a Manchester United supporter. If I think back to my life of following United, the best league titles, it's really obvious which ones they were pretty much. 93, 96, 99, 03 and 07 and 13. And what they have in common is that they came the year after United didn't win the title. And you don't want to win all the time because it's not interesting. It's not fun. And obviously in the moment, I wasn't stood there at Sunderland on the last day of 2012 saying, what I need here is I need City to score against QPR because otherwise it'll be bad for the league and it'll be boring if United go and win another league title in a row. That is obviously not what I was saying. But when you look at it in the round and when you take yourself away from your kind of blinkered partisanness, you realize that one of the reasons we have sport is because we don't know what's going to happen and we want to find out what's going to happen, and we don't want it to be a case where we know what's going to happen. And that isn't just about who wins the league, it's about what's going to happen on a week-to-week basis. And one of the best things about the English game that has been challenge over the last couple of years is that Liverpool and City were so consistent that the points tallies they've been getting to win the title is too much. And that you don't want it to be like that on a week-to-week basis. And that is one of my worries about this season, that I think we could have an unbelievable title race because Liverpool, United, Chelsea, City all look like they could be good enough to get enough points at least to challenge. But what we don't want is we don't want those four teams to be spanking everyone every week, so that you end up with sort of 96, 94, 92, 91, and those what the top four get. Like, that's too many points. And back to this Ronaldo signing, what signing someone like Ronaldo gives you is one of the ways that big teams keep winning every week on a week to week is options. And if you look at United's attacking options now, if they're not winning in a game, the amount of nonsense they're going to have on the bench is just like absolutely, I mean, it's ill what United are going to be able to throw on to win games. And you don't want it to quite be like that. And I hope that it doesn't become like that, where you want like sort of 85 to 90 points roughly is where you want your league champions to be. And I hope that's what that is. And I know that I was just saying before that, and I think I made this point, but I want to emphasise it, that I'm not saying that because the way that City and Paris have got their money is so appalling, that doesn't mean I'm obscuring myself to Barcelona's relationship with oil money or with Bayern Munich's relationship with oil money or with the Glazers funding Trump or any of that stuff. Like, I'm extremely aware of it. But there's also a point at football where the problem with football is that I guess the most obvious comparator of what football isn't is American sports, where in American sports you have the college system, which then enables you to have the draft, which then enables you to redistribute wealth, which then enables the worst teams to buy the best players. And that is quite equitable. And obviously the reason it's equitable is that's the best way of keeping the circle of money going round and round when they have a closed shop.
It's a beautiful cartel.
And, yes. And if you support a team for long enough, there's a pretty good chance you're going to see him win the Super Bowl. And obviously, English football and football generally can't run like that. But I would like to see something that means that you can't just findom the sport.
And look, it is obviously a very complicated future that is really essentially here now. The way that this is the inevitable. When the money tap gets turned on, the bigger teams are going to benefit the most. And this, what we're seeing with the cartoonish style transfers this summer, is probably the most obvious iteration of that. Who knows? Maybe Mbappe and Neymar and Messi couldn't play together. Maybe the egos of the three of them would prevent that team from achieving, and them crashing out in horrific fashion in a 6-2 defeat in the quarterfinals to, I don't know, some mediocre European team is exactly what European football needs. But I don't know. I think Mbappe ends up at Real Madrid and maybe Pogba ends up at PSG, and there's still 3 days of this madness to go. Who knows?
I mean, it's going to be amazing to watch. I mean, I was actually really interested to see how it worked at Paris, because a forward line of Mbappe, Neymar and Messi is almost the opposite of Maurizio Pochettino. Not that he doesn't understand good players, I don't mean that, but the effort that he expects, the work that he expects from all his players, was not something that he appeared to have the players to do for him at Paris. And he's now obviously going to lose Mbappe, who is of the three the one you would most expect to be able to press in the way that he would like. And I can't pretend that I'm not fascinated to see how all this stuff works out. And the same with Ronaldo. Of course, I have reservations isn't even the word. Like, I have reservations about Ronaldo at United morally, and that's not going to change the first time he scores, but I'm still fascinated to see how he gets on. And I'm still fascinated to see how good he still is, because what we haven't talked about yet is what we saw at Juventus, where he scored an absolute bucket load of goals, but didn't necessarily make them better. I mean, it was kind of difficult because they had also lost Allegri, who was kind of the brains behind that team that kept winning leagues. And the players weren't quite as good as they had been, so there was also that going on. But when you talk about the football that United are going to play with Ronaldo, I would imagine that Ronaldo would play a fairly similar role to Cavani, as just Ole often quite talks about a proper centre-forward.
Yeah.
And I think that he's become a little bit torn, because on the one hand, he appears to be trying to put together a forward line of attackers that can play right, left and centre. So the next season, you might have thought United's front three would be Sancho, Rashford and Greenwood. They can all play in all three positions across the line, which is reminiscent of Rooney, Ronaldo, Tevez. But at the same time, when Cavani was doing really well last season, Ole was talking about proper centre-forward. He was a centre-forward himself. He played with Andy Cole, Dwight York, Teddy Sheringham, Ruud van Nistelrooy. He likes a centre-forward. So he knows, and also Wayne Rooney and Lewis Saar. So he knows what a centre-forward is meant to do. And he loved that about Cavani, that he would be scoring tap-ins, he'd be scoring headers, he'd be running across the front post. Now, that is what I imagine he's going to want from Ronaldo. And when Ronaldo is going to have Bruno Fernandes, perhaps Paul Pogba, and then Jadon Sancho and Marcus Rashford either side, what I think we're going to see from Ronaldo is we're going to see a poacher. Like, he's going to do some work outside the box, but ultimately he's going to play between the width of the posts, and he's going to try and score goals like Harry Kane tries to score goals, like Romelu Lukaku tries to score goals. I doubt there'll be many games where Ronaldo starts coming off the wing. He's going to be a centre forward.
Look, the people should definitely go and read about the allegations that were made against Ronaldo and the dealing that has been going on around that case, and become informed about that, because it's impossible to look at people as just their job. We have to look at them as whole human beings, and so I think you're right to raise that today. And I think it's actually something that probably Manchester United haven't thought about too much, but that will become a massive story as the English tabloid press begins to go after that story and begins to highlight it in a way that when he's in Italy, it's a story because Ronaldo used to play for Manchester United and he's one of the most famous athletes in the world. But now he's there week in, week out. He's on Sky every Saturday, every Sunday afternoon. It's wall-to-wall coverage. So it'll be very interesting to see how that story gets covered, and you know, we now have a front row seat for that. So that's one aspect of this. There's obviously the relationship that the Glazers have with the fans. There was a fixture called off at the end of last season because of fan activism around the ground. That's like, again, something that is going to be very interesting to see if this is enough to charm back or to win back some of the lost favour. Again, interesting to see how that happens. And the football aspect of it, I think our brains are big enough to be able to maintain these three stories and the other stories that are coming to see exactly what comes next.
It's a funny one because as a writer, you're never sure, like, how often do I mention this? I feel exactly the same. Like, I cover a lot of tennis as well. And so I was doing Wimbledon. I was on the Guardian daily blog almost every day of Wimbledon. So I covered a lot of Alex Zverev matches. And there are some pretty nasty allegations about Alex Zverev and domestic abuse. And the Guardian has covered them extensively too. And it felt like every time I covered Alex Zverev winning a match, I just felt morally obliged to link to a piece about this. Because we can't allow sport to obscure what our moral clarity and our moral standards. But at the same time, I'd also be watching it and I'd be saying, Zverev's just played absolutely brilliantly here.
Yeah.
He's just beaten Novak Djokovic at the Olympics to win the gold medal. And I think I've been watching Zverev play tennis for several years now. He's someone that I always thought, I can't see him ever being good enough to beat someone who's better than him to win a major. And I've been saying over the last two or three majors now, I think that Zverev is getting there. I think that Zverev is getting there. And then the other side of my brain is saying, but who cares what Zverev's doing? And it's the same with Ronaldo. And I know that we'll be sitting here talking one Monday morning and I'll say, oh my gosh, Ronaldo was incredible yesterday. And in the back of my mind and in the back of your mind, there'll be this other thing. And you can't, yeah, we need to, football and sport, one of the best things about is that it enables us to lose ourselves. It enables us to just think about something that is only this. And we resent the infiltration of the stuff that sport, we enjoy sport helping us forget about.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can never divorce sport from those things because sport is played by humans. And so humans are messy, so sport is messy, and life is messy, and the world is messy. And it's our job, ultimately, to try and unpick it in a way that enables us to love sport, love our teams, but also not to lose who we are and lose what we consider is right and wrong, lose our sense of right and wrong. And as I say this, I'm just like, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, man, I can't wait to see Ronaldo play.
I know, it's like, how many goals are you going to score? It's probably about 25.
And that's it, like, what's going to happen? We don't know what's going to happen. Is he past it? Is he not past it? Will he put it in? Will he not put it in? What kind of centre forward is he going to be? And all these technical things, like, imagine Jadon Sancho putting the ball at the front post for Ronaldo. And then you just remember again. And then, I mean, yeah, like, the world is a mess. What can we do?
It absolutely is. And look, I'm glad you brought up the Zverev thing because I would have been following one of those live blogs when I need to do a little bit of reading about this guy and would have clicked on the link that you linked to. So I think it's up to everybody to stay.
There was a very long report on Slate by Ben Rosenberg, I think his name is, Ben Rosenberg or Ben Rothenberg, that he did, Slate did an investigation, the US site did an investigation that they published this week. That I would say that everyone should read. That will tell you everything you need to know about that situation. And again, like, it's sub judice, or there's been no verdict, but you read it and you obviously evaluate what you think the situation is, because you're always in this situation with any kind of rape or sexual assault where it's extraordinarily can be extraordinarily difficult to prove.
Yeah.
So you often end up in a situation where there's a hiatus, but you read up about it and then you obviously can't draw your own. You can't decide what happened because you weren't there. But sometimes it's possible to read stuff and think there is a lot here.
Yeah. Well, I think what everybody gets to decide is whether or not they're going to continue to support the athletes, and you can withdraw your support. And that doesn't make any blind bit of difference to them, but at least you can have that conversation with people and you can remind people that these are hugely important things. And you're right, it is messy and it is complicated, but that is life. And that's kind of why we love sport in the first place. It was the thing that drew us, you know, the transformative power is clearly something that is glorious about the ability of sports teams to unify a country, or to, you know, for us to see a human transform from somebody who couldn't do something to somebody who can do something. That's what suckers us in the first place. But it equally has the power to transform somebody with a bad reputation to somebody who we kind of forget about or forgive because of their ability to do that thing. So,
and it transforms us as well, where we become just these gibbering idiots who are just so addicted to the buzz and the love and the joy of watching sport that we suspend the moral standards that sustain us through the rest of our lives. And yeah, we're not allowed to do that. We can't do that.
No, fair enough. And that was a relatively interesting conversation there, Daniel. Thanks very much for having it.
Relatively.
Well, yeah, no, totally.
compared to my other ones or compared
to... No, just of a Friday evening, I think. certainly compared to some of the other conversations I've been hearing about this. But how many goals will he score, Daniel? That's the most important question to finish this on.
26.
I would 25 over under. I would go over on that as well. Yeah, look, there's plenty in this that we could continue to get stuck into, but time's against us, and we'll have plenty of opportunities for us now as this deal is confirmed this evening. Cristiano Ronaldo is a Manchester United player. Well over a million likes at this stage, so it's doing good business on the socials anyway. Daniel Harris, good stuff. Thanks a million.
Thanks a lot. Have a good weekend, everyone. Shabbat shalom. Bye.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. The best partnership since Vidic and Ferdinand. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.